Welcome to installment 74 of Sefer HaMitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's commandment is prohibition number 262. In the Rambam's laws of marriage, the prohibition on a husband to withhold his marital obligations from his wife, namely food, clothing, and marital relations. Maimonides informs us that this commandment is learned from the book of Exodus, chapter 21, and in particular verses 9 and 10. This section deals primarily with a Jewish maidservant. This is a young girl who has been sold by her father to another man to be a servant and to go and to serve him in order for this man to be her master. The verses go and discuss how she differs from a normal servant, a non-Jewish servant, and encourages actually her master to go and marry her. In the event that he does not wish to marry her, it encourages this master to hand her to his son, that his son should go and marry her. And in this verse, it states that she should be treated like any other daughter, any other Jewish woman who was married, and not to go and discriminate against her and treat her shabbily because she was previously a servant. The next verse, verse number 10, deals with what happens if the master, after marrying her, decides to take another wife. As we know, according to biblical law, polygamy, that a man should marry two wives, is allowed, as was in fact done by Jacob. It's parenthetically mentioned, since the time of Rabbeinu Gershom, approximately 1,000 years ago, this has been forbidden, and a Jewish man is not allowed to go and take more than one wife, at least according to Ashkenazic custom. In any case, the verse mentions that if he takes another wife on top of this wife, in addition to her, he may not withhold from her food, number one, number two, clothing, and number three, conjugal relations. Sheirak, susa, veinosa, liigra. That as a result of his increased obligation of having another wife, this maidservant who has become his first wife should not have to suffer. And therefore, the direct commandment is relating to a Hebrew maidservant that she cannot be deprived of any of these three things, food, clothing, or conjugal relations. The Rambam points out, however, from the Mechilta, that the previous verse states that this maidservant must be treated like any other wife. And therefore, the Mechilta learns that just like a maidservant cannot be deprived these three things, so too any other wife can also not be deprived of these three things, she'edak, susa, ve'nosa, food, clothing, and conjugal relations. Therefore, even though explicitly the verse is referring to a maidservant, nevertheless, we learn that the mitzvah applies to any other Jewish wife, that there is a prohibition that a man cannot deprive his wife of any of these three marital obligations. There is discussion among the commentary whether, in fact, all of these three things are all biblical commandments, or perhaps only one, or perhaps two. The Rambam, however, states clearly that all three of them are of biblical origin, and therefore he must provide for all three things for his wife. It's interesting to point out the practical effect of going and making such a normal requirement, an obvious requirement of feeding and clothing one's wife, and in addition one's family, of making this a mitzvah commandment. Normal intellect and normal humanity would require that one would have to go and provide clothing and provide food for one's family. However, this is made a mitzvah, and therefore there are certain obligations which are incumbent upon the husband which are completely independent of whether he wants to do so or not. It becomes, in fact, a holy obligation, not only a human obligation, and therefore must be provided under any and all circumstances. Another effect of making this a mitzvah is that a person's entire work, his entire workday, and his entire livelihood could normally be seen in a perspective of being something which is only something he must do and having nothing to do with his holy obligation as a Jew. However, since now we learn that he has a mitzvah, he has a commandment, and in fact a prohibition against going and not going and providing these things. In fact, he must go and provide all of these three things. It becomes a mitzvah, a commandment upon him. And he must go and work in order to go and keep from violating this prohibition. So therefore, in fact, his entire workday and his entire occupation becomes part of this mitzvah, part of his obligation. Not that he's merely making a living, but the whole day he's involved in going and taking part in a mitzvah, the commandment of going and caring for his family. In discussing the commandment of Kiddushin, of marriage, we discuss the idea of chuppah, of the actual nisuyin, the taking of a wife, which comes after the betrothal ceremony. And we mentioned, according to one opinion, that what does the chuppah consist of? It consists of the husband going and treating his bride as one would normally treat a wife.
And this, as we mentioned then, consists of the normal obligations a husband has for his wife. And therefore we see all three things done, or at least hinted to, in the marriage ceremony. The idea of clothing is hinted to in the chuppah, that both the bride and the groom are covered by a garment, in some communities a talis. Another one, the actual chuppah, which is held up by four sticks. The second obligation, to go and feed his wife and feed his family, is often observed by going and providing food immediately following the ceremony in a private room for the husband and the wife, the newly married bride and groom. And the third idea, a nasa of conjugal relations, is hinted to in the idea of yichud, that both of them are allowed to be alone immediately following the marriage ceremony. And therefore, all in the idea of chuppah, all three of these obligations are immediately fulfilled. In the Rambam's legal code, Yad HaChazakah, all of these three obligations are discussed in great detail. Although all three must be fulfilled according to the best of one's ability, according to one's wealth, and so on and so forth, nevertheless, there are minimal obligations which must be fulfilled for all three categories. Inherent in these details, we see the Torah's care and the great stress that our sages placed on the unity of the family and the importance of providing a proper physical and emotional environment for the comfort and happiness and growth of the family. It is also interesting just to see what the way of life was in those times. For example, under the first category of she'era, of food, the Rambam describes the bare minimum. One must eat a normal amount of food which is normal in that place and in that time period, which at the times of the Talmud and the Rambam's times was two meals a day, and all of this in accordance with the normal diet of the place. Bread must be required at all meals, whether it's wheat bread or barley bread or rice or millet, whatever it is, it must be provided, and it must be accompanied by something, not just mere bread. There must be either vegetables or beans or whatever is a normal accompaniment for the food. In addition, oil, not only to light the candles, but in order for food must be provided, fruit should be provided, and in addition, even wine. In a place where it is customary for women to drink wine, wine must also be provided, as this was the normal drink, the normal beverage of the time. As a side note, it's mentioned in the Code of Jewish Law that if a woman is nursing, an additional wine must be provided by the husband, and this is part of his marital obligation, that since wine is very conducive for the production of milk, therefore a nursing mother requires to have a certain amount of wine every day. After mentioning that he must provide two meals every single day, the Rambam states that on the Shabbos, three meals must be provided. And as the custom is in this place, whether it's meat or fish or whatever is the normal food, that is the minimum which is required to be provided for his wife. Under the category of she'era, the Rambam includes not only the needs of food, but also personal needs of the wife. Therefore, she must be provided with an allowance, a personal stipend, to attend to her own needs. This is also in accordance with the time and place and custom. All of this, however, that Rambam mentions, is only the minimum which must be required by a poor person. If a person is rich, he must provide his wife and his family in accordance with his wealth. If he can afford and has an amount of money which indicates he should be feeding them meat every single day, he must provide a sufficient amount for them to do so. Therefore, everything we've mentioned is only a bare minimum. Of course, he must provide for his children as well. And the Torah actually concludes a provision. If the husband should go and leave and travel away to another land and leave his family without money, that the Jewish court has the right to go and sell his belongings, to go and sell it and give the money to the wife in order to provide for the family. Minimal requirements are also indicated by the Rambam in the matter of clothing. And he indicates that for the land of Israel at such a time, the man had to provide approximately 50 zuz worth of clothing every year. New clothing was bought at the beginning of the winter, when the weather was coldest, and it would be worn throughout the year until the new year would arrive. And therefore, even though it would be worn out by the end of the year, since the weather was already warmer, it wouldn't bother them so much. In addition, the Rambam says, they must buy a new hat and new shoes between every holiday. From Passover to Shavuos, there had to be a new pair of shoes, and so too from Shavuos to Sukkot. This is indicated by our sages, is mainly because in those climates and in the mountains, the shoes wore out very fast. In addition, a minimal requirement is the husband has to go and buy a scarf for his wife, a colored scarf, and even provide her with makeup, such as lipstick and mascara, which the Rambam describes. In addition, he must provide housing, must provide bedding, mats to sit on, dishes for cooking and for serving. And all of these are only the minimal requirements. In addition, someone that has more money must even go and provide his wife with jewelry to the best of his ability and according to what he can afford. Today in the Kesuba, which is written before the marriage, we have all three of these categories referred to. We have written in the Kesuba that the husband promises to provide his wife Mizanaichi with her food, Ksusaichi with her clothing, Sbukaichi all her other needs, which as we discussed before could be bedding and furnishings and her own personal needs, and Lameil of Azaichi Ka'erach Kalara, which is conjugal relations he also promises to fulfill. And even though all of these three things are anyway biblical requirements, so why should he have to explicitly write that he's going and undertaking to go and provide them? Even without writing it in the Ksuba, he would anyway be required as a husband to fulfill all three things to his wife. The Tashbatz writes that the reason we indicate this explicitly in the Ksuba is to emphasize to the husband his responsibility, that even though there is already a biblical responsibility, we remind him at the time that he must provide for his wife and his family in the best possible fashion. In his legal code, the Rambam writes that although there are three biblical responsibilities, as we have discussed, there are seven rabbinic responsibilities which the husband also has to fulfill. To discuss a few of them, the husband must go and provide a Ksuba, the amount of ksuba, which means that if, in the event of becoming a widow or becoming a divorcee, that her husband should pass away or there should be a divorce, he should go and provide her with a stipend with an amount which is indicated in the ksuba in order that she should be able to live and to be able to provide for her family. This is one requirement. Another rabbinic requirement is that the husband must pay for the wife's medical costs. Another is that he must redeem her from captivity. If she is captured, he must pay for the cost of bringing her to freedom. Should she die, it is the husband's responsibility to pay for the burial. And should the husband die, the husband has no right to will the house over to someone else, that the widow has the right to go and live in the house as long as she pleases until she remarries. Underlying this commandment is the Torah's demand and the Torah's requirement for mutual respect and mutual honor. As the Rambam says, that our sages commanded that a husband should go and love his wife just as he loves himself, and to honor her even more than he honors himself, and to go and speak with her only in the nicest fashion, in a pleasant manner, not in a depressed way, and not in anger. And so too, the wife is commanded to go and respect her husband. And in this way, the Rambam says, Yiyeh yeshuva no meshubach, that they will go and live in a beautiful way and a praiseworthy way forever.